Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When investment performance matters, make sure your savings are with Zurich. Visit zurich.ie to find out more.
Conservative MP Sir Bernard Jenkin and Chair of the Liaison Committee concluded this afternoon's meeting with Boris Johnson by asking him to clarify his intentions. He was also questioned by Labour MP Chris Byrant.
If you have lost the confidence of your MPs and you're required to step down as leader of the Conservative Party, you will not seek to dissolve Parliament.
People continue to focus on this type of thing, and I think that is a mistake.
How would it help the crisis in Ukraine and the cost of living crisis if we were plunged into a general election that nobody wants?
Rule it out.
You've ruled it out.
The earliest date that I can see for a general election is 2 years from now. Or 2024, I think, is the most likely date for the next election. We have a huge amount to deliver. We're going to get on and do it.
And you'll resign if a vote of confidence in the Conservative Party...
I think we're done.
...is carried.
You're asking me to comment on politics. I think it's important that we get on and deliver on our agenda. And that is what I was elected to do.
Well, I think it's the understanding of this committee. You envisage a general election in 23 or 24, not before.
Well, you said
23. And if you've lost the confidence of your own MPs and you cease to be leader of the Conservative Party, you will not plunge this country into an unwanted general election.
I've been very clear with you. I see no reason whatever for a general election now. On the contrary, what we need is a stable government, loving each other, as Conservatives, getting on with our priorities. That is what we need to do. Simona, okay?
I love all my colleagues in the House of Commons.
Fantastic.
Order.
Thank you.
Well, does that sound like a man who has any intention of going anytime soon? Well, for some analysis and all of this, we're joined now by Dominic Grieve, a former Attorney General for England and Wales and former Conservative MP. And thank you, Dominic, for joining us. I know it's been a very busy 24 hours for everyone over there. I might just get your reaction, really, firstly, to what Boris had to say at the end of that committee.
One listens to what he has to say, but I have to say it seems to me he's living in a fantasy land. He's undoubtedly been instrumental for creating deep divisions in the Conservative Party. I'm not sure about loving everybody. It's true that I think he's a man who would like to be loved by everybody. But the fact of the matter is that he's at the end. I cannot see how he is going to survive this. And it's slightly sad to see the sight of a Prime Minister who doesn't appear to comprehend the extent to which he has alienated his colleagues and indeed behaved in a way which must inevitably lead to his departure.
So this threat that he appears to be making, that he would call an election if MPs turn against him or try to force him to go, do you think there's anything in that? Is that possible for him to do?
Well, it's a very strange thing to do, because if you're going to call an election, you've got to have the support of your cabinet in doing it. Simply to treat it as an individual act raises the prospect that he calls an election which he is campaigning for a party of one.
So, speaking of the cabinet then, the news in the last half an hour or so is that a number of cabinet ministers, including the new Chancellor Nadeem Zahawi, have sent the chief whip to Number 10 to tell Boris Johnson to resign. There's a delegation of senior politicians who have gone. That also includes Transport Secretary Grant Shapps and Welsh Secretary Simon Hart. They've both said the PM's position is untenable. They've sent Chris Heaton-Harris to deliver that news, with reports from Sky News in just the last couple of minutes that Priti Patel is also in Number 10. What do you make of all that?
Well, I think this is all the end game of this particular process. But as I say, what's so unusual about this is that ordinarily any other person holding prime ministerial office, subject to what's happened in the last 48 hours, would, I think, have seen the writing on the wall and concluded that he had to go with some dignity. And in this case, I have a strange sense that there is going to be no dignity involved and that this Prime Minister is going to continue until finally he is ousted, in which case it will have to be by another vote of the 1922 committee, and I think that they're preparing to do that and to change their rules to enable that to happen. Of course, even that, in theory, doesn't mean the Prime Minister can't continue governing, but it's worth noting that this afternoon he's unable to fill the ministerial posts which are falling vacant.
I saw that reported by The Guardian that the whips are telling MPs they literally don't have anyone to fill the posts. So if we just, and I'll get back to the 1922 committee in a second, but if we just say the Prime Minister is still there next week, what happens in the case where a Prime Minister doesn't have enough people to fill his posts?
It's an extraordinary state of affairs, although perhaps Mr. Johnson is a person who likes to create extraordinary states of affairs. And ultimately, the only way in which Mr. Johnson can be got rid of as Prime Minister is by vote of the House of Commons having no confidence in the government. Of course, that would be a strange thing to happen because whilst Conservative MPs might wish to get rid of Mr. Johnson, they certainly don't wish to bring their own a Conservative government down. They wish to replace it. So it's absolutely true that if Mr. Johnson behaves in a completely reckless and extraordinary fashion, this thing could get drawn out still further. But the reality is that if a Prime Minister cannot find colleagues to fill ministerial posts, he can't continue in office, that the whole thing becomes a sort of charade. So for those reasons, I think that this is pretty much close to the end.
In terms of the timing of this, then, the 1922 committee, as you mentioned, is meeting. They're meeting right now, actually. That meeting was due to start at 5 o'clock, and it's expected that they're going to change the leadership rules. Now, the news on that is that there's a possibility the vote of confidence could be triggered tonight because there might be enough letters submitted, over 180 letters submitted, which would be enough, I think, to win a vote of no confidence. So if there's 180 letters submitted just to the 1922 committee alone, that might be enough to change the rules tonight. Is that your understanding?
I can see that is perfectly possible. It all depends on the rules of the 1922 committee, but in an emergency, I can see it can move swiftly, and for very good reasons. There's a significant public interest that this matter should be resolved very quickly. So if they could hold a vote tonight and point out that he's lost the confidence of the majority of MPs, that may bring this to an end.
Just to note that CNN's correspondent Luke McGee has tweeted in the last couple of minutes that there's lots of table banging in the 1922 committee room, unclear who, if anyone, or what it's in support of. So we'll watch that very closely as well. Okay, so we'll see what happens there at the 1922 committee. But as you say, it does seem that one way or another, Boris Johnson's time is probably coming to an end. What happens then, Dominic? Because there's a lot of talk already about how this is going to get very vicious very quickly.
There will be a leadership election. That leadership election will start with candidates putting their names forward with backers, and the Conservative Parliamentary Party has to whittle down the total number to two. That will take about 10 days to do and will in fact be done before the end of the parliamentary session. Thereafter, and obviously as quickly as possible, there will have to be a leadership election by the members of the Conservative Party. That will cause quite a lot of anxiety, I'm sure, to parliamentarians, because there is a sense of whether the Conservative Party membership, who are not really representative of Conservative voters, will make the right choice. But that's what's going to happen. Those are the rules of the Conservative Party. In the meantime, it's also unclear if Mr. Johnson will stay in office, or alternatively, whether he will be replaced by a caretaker prime minister. If he is replaced by a caretaker prime minister, then I think it would have to be somebody who themselves is not standing for election.
Okay, right, and that, because that was going to be my answer, or my question rather, as to who that would be. Would it be one of those who have already resigned? But a lot of those who have resigned in recent days are likely to want to throw their hat into the ring.
I can't see somebody standing being an acceptable caretaker prime minister. So it would have to be one of the senior members of the cabinet who is not. If for example, Mr. Raab is not standing, which I suppose is possible, it's not clear he intends to stand. Then he, as he's currently Deputy Prime Minister, he would doubtless fulfil that role.
Just another update on the 1922 committee. It's being reported by a number of political correspondents that they will not change their rules tonight and that elections for the new committee will now take place with results on Monday night and rules could then change by Tuesday. If we get back to the leadership election, Dominic, that we're all expecting to happen at this point, what's your take on who is in the running there, really? Because you have this really interesting dynamic of those who have stayed loyal to Boris Johnson right to the end. You know, you've Liz Truss in there, you've Priti Patel, you've Dominic Raab, as you've mentioned, Nadeem Sahawi, although it appears he's among those who are now asking Boris to leave. And then on the other side, you have people like Sajid Javid and Rishi Sunak who have left. Do you think those who have stayed loyal to the very end will have helped their case?
I wouldn't wish to speculate on that. I think it's impossible to tell. It's also impossible to tell who's going to be to come out of this as lead candidates. I think it's completely up in the air. And in fairness, the mood of the parliamentary party is probably quite hard to gauge because doubtless they are reacting minute by minute to how some of their colleagues in government and cabinet are behaving. So I wouldn't wish to speculate.
Ms. Northern Ireland Minister Conor Burns was speaking a little earlier and he's been warning Conservative MPs about what this might do to the party. He said, look what the Tory party did to itself when they got rid of Margaret Thatcher in 1990. He said it took a generation for the party to recover then. Would you be concerned that the Conservative Party could tear itself apart over this?
Yes, I think the Conservative Party could tear itself apart over this, but I have to say, that's not the reason for not getting rid of Mr. Johnson. Mm. Mr. Johnson is the cause of the party tearing itself apart, the first step to getting itself out of the hole which it has successfully dug for itself is to get rid of Mr. Johnson.
In terms of what happens next then, as you mentioned, the new leader, if there is one, is going to be elected by the Conservative Party, not by the people. Does that person then have a mandate, really, to lead as Prime Minister?
Well, constitutionally, he does. We don't have, just as in Ireland, you have a Taoiseach and we have a Prime Minister. That is a person who commands a majority. Well, one of the less attractive aspects of modern British politics, which Mr. Johnson seems to have relied on, is this view that he has a popular mandate directly from the people. He doesn't. And indeed, once you start taking that view into a sort of semi-presidential system, it's when I think the whole thing starts to fall apart because the accountability to Parliament starts to disappear. Mr. Johnson has shown pretty clearly he doesn't consider himself really accountable to Parliament at all. Indeed, his comments over the last few days seem to illustrate a complete lack of understanding of his responsibilities in that direction.
After this, where to now for the Conservative Party? What do you think? What direction do you think it needs to take to rebuild itself, but also to rebuild the UK's international reputation? You know, an awful lot of criticism, for example, over the publication of legislation to override the Northern Ireland Protocol and break international law.
Conservative Party has always done well when it's seen as pragmatic, rooted in common sense policies, believing in trying to be careful with the public finances whilst also alleviating areas of need, and where it's also shown as upholding institutions and upholding the international rules-based system. That's how it's always come across, a deliverer in an ideal conditions of what I think is called in our country quiet government. It has completely lost this as a consequence, I'm afraid, of Brexit. Brexit was a revolutionary act, and so as a consequence, it has caused major disruption. And the problems that beset the Conservative Party, including ending up with Mr. Johnson, are in a sense a direct consequence of that. Now, that's not to say that Brexit is reversible or indeed desirable at this stage. It should be reversed. That's not the point. We've got to make do with where we are. But the party will only be successful again if it starts to anchor itself in such policies and to rebuild its reputation, which has been absolutely trashed by Mr. Johnson's behaviour.
Because Ireland is obviously watching what's going on over there very closely, because what the next Prime Minister does in relation to that particular piece of legislation on the Northern Ireland Protocol is obviously hugely important. Would you expect or hope or have any faith that the next person coming in would pull that legislation?
Yes, I would. I would hope that the next person coming in would seek to do a reset of our relationship with the EU and our closest partners. Undoubtedly, that means it doesn't just mean abandoning the negotiations around the protocol, because there are legitimate concerns that the UK government has about the way the protocol has been interpreted by the EU, and for the sake of Northern Ireland and the success of the Belfast Good Friday Agreement, it's essential that a solution is found. I have no doubt about that. But that can only be done by cooperation and not by confrontation.
Dominic Gree, former Attorney General for England and Wales, thank you very much for joining us this evening.